evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan, Sudan, and the rest of the region this Wednesday, October 9th, 2024. The head of UNMISS urges South Sudan's government to get busy on laying the groundwork for the next elections.
This latest extension should not make political leaders complacent. Instead, they must use the next 4 months until February 25, when the extended period commences, to set realistic targets and achieve them.
And one Magwi County resident says not so fast on a planned project for that area.
Communities who will be affected will be resettled. Where are you going to resettle them? You take them to which land? This is our land, a land given to us by God. We have been there for centuries.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The former national spy chief arrived Wednesday in Juba. He did not stop to make a speech when he arrived at Juba International Airport earlier today. Many citizens are hopeful that Akul Kur Cook's appointment as governor of Warab State will lead to beefed up security in the area, which has been engulfed by communal conflicts. Dennis Lagonye has this report for VOA from Juba.
A huge crowd of South Sudanese from Warab State gathered at Juba International Airport and at the home of General Akul Kur to welcome him after arriving from the United Arab Emirates on Wednesday. Akul Kur Kuch, the former Director General of the Internal Security Bureau, or ISB, arrived in Juba Wednesday amid heavy troops deployment along Airport Road. Some residents of Warab say they expect Kuch to focus on building a strong system of governance in Warab State.
Akul is not new in the system. Been in the system, though not in the governor role, but whatever that he was given, he had managed well. And while in the office, we want him to establish the state to be like the NS. We want good system again, because the whole system had been a mess at the state. And I think with him right now, things will change, because as you know, the firing and the sacking of all the governors might have brought some disorganization in the state. But with him, he already know how to establish the system and how to put a good system in place. So I'm seeing a lot of good things coming forward with him right now being the state governor.
According to a UN report in March 2024, intercommunal violence affected 740 residents of Warab State. Albino Akol Atem is a resident of Warab State. He says he wants Kuch to bring an end to the communal killings in the state.
I'm very excited about the appointment of General Akul Kur Kuch. We believe that he will bring to an end the killings that is going on in our state. I believe the president has done it in good faith. And of course, when Rumbek was in crisis, General Rid was tasked to go and bring to an end the ongoing thing. And at least Rumbek is very peaceful now. And this is the same thing we believe President has thought of taking General Akul Kur as the governor of Warab State.
Awing Madot Machar, a resident of Tonj County, a home village of Kuch, says the new governor may bring hope to residents who experienced violence for too long.
It's amazing for Akul to be appointed as a governor of Warab State. Akul is a great leader. He has a lot of qualities and he will actually do great. He will fulfill our expectations. We normally like seeing peace among us and development.
Kuch's appointment was met with fear and wild rumors that he may not accept his removal from the national security post. But Kay Law, who hails from Warab, says Kuch is a nationalist.
He cannot turn down the appointment because he's a son of Warab State. And maybe the president saw something wrong that he wanted to go and correct. Maybe at the state, not because he had done something bad as DG.
Last week, President Kay removed General Akul Kur Kuch from the post of Director General of the Internal Security Bureau, or ISB, and appointed General Akech Tong Aleu as the new Internal Security Bureau Director General. Kuch, a longtime Kir confidant, was fired after serving the spy agency for nearly 13 years. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Lokonyi reporting from Juba.
The head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan is calling on South Sudan's leaders to start work on the preconditions for conducting 2026 elections. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Addressing reporters in Juba Wednesday, UNMISS boss Nicholas Asom says South Sudanese should start preparing for the 2026 elections now.
This latest extension should not make political leaders complacent. Instead, they must use the next 4 months until February 25, when the extended period commences, to set realistic targets and achieve them.
Last month, South Sudan's transitional government of national unity announced an extension of the transitional period by another 2 years, thereby postponing elections until December 2026. ASOM says South Sudan's leaders have said they plan to achieve some of the key outstanding tasks that stood in the way of holding elections in December this year.
Take decisions on voter registration now to enable the voter registration process to start next year. We want to launch the launch of voter registration. Complete phase one of the deployment of necessary unified forces. Devise an agreed code of conduct for political parties, civil society, and the media that reflects the aspirations of South Sudanese.
Abenigo Akuk, chairperson of South Sudan National Election Commission, says plans are in place for the country to hold elections in December 2026.
Our timetable is to organize the statewide election committees. They are now in their places and their offices. And then the vehicles and so on. The budget is not yet passed. The budget is in before the parliament. It is time now for the election commission to start civic education, voter education.
Akok says the National Election Commission has tabled a budget of $236 million before the Transitional National Legislative Assembly. He says once it is approved, his office will roll out elections activities. Speaking to VOA today, the spokesperson for the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, Oliver Benjamin Mori, says the budget for the National Election Commission will be passed anytime soon.
The election is important as health, as education, or any other spending agencies. They are on equal footing. We are not working based on the pressure of the international community. We are working as a sovereign state of the Republic of South Sudan.
South Sudanese Edris Akech says holding elections is the only way for South Sudan to achieve development.
As a common citizen, so all we need is the services that community needs, like health, education, all this. And our hope is that after election, all these things will be there. That one need a collective responsibility by the government and the international agencies like the UN.
The South Sudan's transitional government of national unity has said it has no funds to implement the 2018 peace deal and keep provisions for the conduct of elections. ASOM says South Sudanese leaders should demonstrate a real commitment to hold elections on time. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
Community leaders in Magwe County of Eastern Equatoria State have rejected a multi-purpose project that is supposed to be implemented in their area. Several local leaders say the project will do more harm than good to Magwe County residents, as we hear from Kaltuma Vanessa in Torrent.
South Sudan Minister of Water Resource and Irrigation Paul Maideng presented a memo to the Council of Ministers about a $98 million joint project between South Sudan and Uganda to construct two dams for irrigation and water supply at the Limor Stream, bordering Magwe County in South Sudan and the Lamor District of Uganda. Ochan Bongomin, a member of parliament representing the Lemoore area, says the precondition for implementing the project has not been completed. Bongomin says the project was rejected by the community in 2017 due to the negative effect on the communities living in the targeted areas.
Communities who will be affected will be resettled. Where are you going to resettle them? You take them to which land? This is our land, a land given to us by God. We have been there for centuries. Now where will you resettle me? You take me to which area? So these are some of the problems which is being faced by this project.
Otim David Okot, chairperson of Acholi community in South Sudan, says residents of Magwe County were surprised to see the project resurface again during a cluster meeting in Juba.
We look this one as a conspiracy, the aim of grabbing the land of the community. And any conspiracy that way, we shall reject it and resist it ferociously. And nobody can stop us. It is a suspicious scheme. And we have moved very fast and to reject it. First of all, there is an encroachment on our land.
Magwe is one of the Eastern Equatoria State 8 counties. It borders one of the South Sudan's most important trading partner, Uganda. The River Nile enters the county near the town of Nimule before flowing north along the county's eastern border. The county is divided into three payams, Magwe, Pajok, and Iwir. Angelo Oringa Mark, chairperson of the Panyukwara community, says state and national government should focus on what the community needs, and it's not water.
They don't see any importance of a dam because they don't even have a problem with water. They have the river there. They didn't even see the importance of rice scheme. They're not even seeing the importance of rearing cattle there because they're not really nomads. These are the agriculturists. So the community priority, as we talk now, needs the road and bridges like Owinki Bull. At the moment, you cannot access it. So the main problem of our community is road and bridges.
Oyet Joseph Charles, the Boma chief of Owinki Bull, says he has absolutely no information about the project.
We did not receive anyone coming from maybe like from the state, from the county, even from the national level. Nobody came and talked about this project. That's why I'm saying we did not receive any concerns about the project. Secondly, our people on the ground, totally, they don't know anything about this project. We cannot accept anything which we did not attend with the single person who came and talked about this project.
Maiju Korok, South Sudan's Deputy Minister of Information, says the cabinet directed the Minister of Water Resource and Irrigation to provide a roadmap for the project and to consult with stakeholders, including the local community in the proposed project area. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Eastern Equatoria State Capital, Torit.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up on South Sudan in Focus, Uganda gets a helping hand to support Sudanese refugees. Find out from who when we come back.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Well, on today's weekly Words of Wisdom, we have a contribution from Central Equatoria State.
Good evening, listeners of South Sudan in Focus. I am Julius Amuda with a proverb in the Kuku language from Kajukeji County of Central Equatoria State in South Sudan. The proverb says, Manyang Sok Welet, directly translated as a monitor lizard, though skinny or thin, remains fatty. The proverb means, do not undermine someone based on his or her body size. Size cannot determine the strength of someone.
Yesterday, the United States government announced it is giving $7.5 million to Uganda to help fund its support of the Sudanese refugee population in the neighboring country. A statement from the U.S. Embassy in Kampala says this is part of nearly $424 million in additional humanitarian funding for Sudan and neighboring countries announced at the U.N. General Assembly. There are more than 33,000 Sudanese refugees living in Uganda. For more on the issue of Sudanese refugees in Uganda, VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached a Ugandan analyst.
We have witnessed over the last few years of the conflict in Sudan, an increasing number of refugees arriving. The Sudanese refugees arriving in the capital, Kampala. Unlike South Sudan, where we have a common border, where refugees just cross over, the ones arriving from Sudan, from Khartoum particularly, arriving by air. So there's an estimate that about 33,000 Sudanese refugees are in Uganda, and the majority of these, about almost 20,000, have arrived in the capital of Uganda since 2024.
How is the government coping with these refugees, this influx of refugees?
Uganda has one of the most liberal policies towards refugees. And I think what helps is that when refugees arrive here, they are largely not confined to refugee camps. Apart from a few cases in border areas where we have refugees from South Sudan, from the Democratic Republic of Congo, an urban refugee settlement of Somalis, a number of Ethiopian refugees, and refugees generally from all over the continent and beyond. The government policy has been to allow these refugees to blend in with society. And therefore, you do not have a huge crisis that you have a concentration in one area of most of these refugees. That's the way government has been able to cope. The refugees that are settled in refugee camps, or those that are settled in refugee camps, the infrastructure is available that government organizes, but the rest, they are competing with nationals. We don't call it competition. We call it sharing with nationals. Whatever resources are available.
On Tuesday, the U.S. government pledged $7.5 million to assist in this situation. Do you think that will help? And do you think the resources will go to the right people?
I think any help is important. This country has stretched to even take care of its own citizens. So when you add the extra responsibility to take care of citizens from other countries arriving here as refugees, any help will be useful. But of course, there are concerns about whether it gets applied directly to the cause for which it has been given or sought. So the expectation is there have been accusations and complaints about corruption, including in the refugee management sector in this country for some time. But the expectation is that this $7.5 million, which translates to about 28 billion Uganda shillings, is put to support these refugees, find comfort and settle in their new life. Living in a country that's surrounded by so many troubled countries, the best thing that the global community can do is support existing local efforts, both directly with refugee host communities, but also through government and civil society, to make sure that these brothers and sisters from wherever they come from find the refuge they are seeking, the peace they are looking for in this country. You have conflict now stretching all the way almost from Egypt down through Sudan, South Sudan. You have an unsettled Somalia, Ethiopia. You have a Democratic Republic of Congo that is still unsettled, Burundi and elsewhere. This is continuing to give an influx of people seeking peace and comfort from every part of almost the continent. We have refugees here coming from as far as Central African Republic.
That is Ugandan analyst Charles Mananguyehia Mpagi. He was speaking with VOA's Douglas Mpuga. Mozambicans are going to the polls today to choose between the party that has dominated their country's political landscape for nearly 50 years or something different. As VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo reports from Maputo, whoever wins will inherit major challenges, including an insurgency in the oil and gas-rich area of Cabo Delgado.
Voters braved morning rain in Maputo to line up as early as 7 a.m. to cast their ballots. They have four candidates to choose from: Daniel Chapo, the ruling Frelimo party leader, Osufo Momad, the candidate of one main opposition party that came in second in the last presidential election, Lutero Simango, the leader of the Mozambique Democratic Movement, and Venancio Mondlane, an independent who seems popular among the youth. Aslak Ora, a researcher on Mozambique at the Christian Michelsen Institute in Norway, says while supporters of Mondlane have shown excitement, he still faces stiff challenges.
There's quite a bit of enthusiasm about his candidature. However, he doesn't have the electoral organization as neither Renamo or Frelimo. So the question is if he's going to be able to convert that obvious enthusiasm among the population into the votes.
At a polling place at the Josina Michelle Secondary School in Maputo, 22-year-old Augusto Page says he waited about an hour, but he had to make sure to vote.
As a young Mozambican man, I feel that this is important because it might be the choice that will change things in our country. So I'm talking about healthcare, education, and development in general.
After casting his ballot, Sergio Panti, a member of parliament and Frelimo's supporter, told us he's confident his party will win. He says people continue to love and highly consider Frelimo as an option to continue running this country. The results will prove once again that Frelimo is loved and esteemed by the Mozambican people. Two of the candidates, Momad and Simango, voted at the same polling place where outgoing President Filipe Nyusi cast his ballot. Former St. Lucia Prime Minister Dr. Kenny Anthony, who arrived in Maputo on October 2nd, heads the Commonwealth International Observers delegation. He told VOA his group was still visiting other polling stations and getting reports from other parts of the country. Meanwhile,
there seemed to be some optimism that this is going to be a better administered election than previous elections. Whether that will be the case, I don't know. We have just visited this particular polling station, and all seem to have gone very well here.
Whoever wins these elections will inherit many challenges, starting with the economy and debt repayments. Orr says
it's between $12 and $14 billion in external debt. Recently, they have been able to transfer or pay back much of that debt, but they have done so by way of accumulating a lot of domestic debt. The state takes up loans from the banking system and from institutions locally. So they're accumulating debt at the same time as they're paying back the external debt.
In addition to debt challenges, the government has been battling an insurgency in the gas and oil-rich Cabo Delgado province, where about 4,000 people have been killed and about 1 million displaced since 2017, hindering multi-billion-dollar oil and gas projects. Some countries, including Rwanda, have stepped in recently to help quell the insurgency, an act that Adriano Nuvunga, a social activist and director of the Center for Democracy and Human Rights in Mozambique, disagrees with.
Mozambique, big as it is, massive as it is, 33 million people, but it needs to import soldiers from Rwanda to protect its sovereignty. From Rwanda, a tiny country, 33 million people, to protect us here.
Ruling party candidate Chapo said if he wins, securing the Cabo Delgado area will be his top priority, because without security, there is no development, he recently told supporters. Nuvunga says while Frelimo was seen as a liberation movement 50 years ago, times have changed.
The people here, they have nothing to do with what you people have done 5 decades ago. It's about today. Are you able to put in place credible policies and put in place a credible system of governance that will work for the people?
More than 17 million people are registered to vote. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
Nearly 2.5 million African immigrants live in the U.S. as part of growing African diaspora, according to the U.S. government statistics. More and more, this community is becoming an important constituency in American elections. In part two of their conversation, VOA's Yehias Wuhib speaks with Chukwunanso Vincent Iwanage, who chairs the Maryland Governor's Commission on African Affairs, as well as the African Diaspora Advisory Board for Prince George's County in Maryland.
That's a very pivotal question, and also is profound in the fact that, you know, again, one of the things that we've pushed is also unity amongst, you know, the Black nations that are here. And a lot of times the sentiment has been that the African immigrant does not understand the struggles that the African American have gone through to be able to get the environment or the situation that we have or we stepped into. And part of the things that we've talked to our people about is to understand, because I think one of the things that plagues us is understanding. Most of the time, the African immigrant comes and says, wow, you guys don't know what you have. So, but that is changing, because part of what we've, you know, we're trying to do here in the county is have what we call an African cultural and multicultural center. And what that will do is, you know, where both people will come together to learn from each other. The African immigrant has been very successful in the areas of education and healthcare with, and, you know, that's, you know, something that the African Americans can learn from. And also we Africans can learn from the struggles of the African American, and also to how they have strived in business through their struggles. So one of the things we're doing is immigration and helping both parties understand that together we'll thrive. But again, working separately will only help, you know, will only hold us back. And I think the advancements of also Afrobeats, which is music, and also culinary, which is food. I think that integration is coming, where a lot of people have started accepting that, okay, you know, it's good to know where you're from. So a lot of course, African Americans have started doing their genealogy to find actually what part of the continent that, you know, they can align with. So that integration is coming, and is, you know, is a work that we'll continue to do both here and hopefully nationally with, you know, some of our allies and our nonprofit. But it's moving forward now, because we could see it with some of the, like I said, the elections that have happened in the past. You know, people with foreign names were not able to win elections, but the integration is happening here in Maryland, and we'll see it nationwide. Maybe we'll be that anchor for the nation to copy from.
Especially, you just mentioned the food and the music. That's one of the ways to actually, you know, get to acclimate ourselves with American society, and especially the African-American society. A lot of Ethiopian restaurants actually becoming cultural ambassadors for their country.
You go to Silver Spring, it's literally Ethiopia. And that's part of what I'm saying is that, you know, through our work and also add value, places like Silver Spring, you know, part of Silver Spring can be named Little Ethiopia. Parts of Baltimore County, where you have a lot of Kenyans and Nigerians, can be named Little Lagos, or even Lanham here. So, but again, those kind of, you know, things, and also, as you could see from what Governor Moore did, and also County Executive also, Bruce, is forward thinking, because, you know, stepping out of the shadows and proclaiming September as African Heritage Month, not that you don't do your work all year round, does is that you amplify it in September, where, you know, you have these several events where the other cultures get to see you.
That is Chuck Wunonso, Vincent Iwanage, chairperson of the Maryland Governor's Commission on African Affairs and the African Diaspora Advisory Board for Prince George's County in Maryland. He was speaking with my colleague Yehias Wuhib here in Washington. And that wraps it up for us this Wednesday. We invite you to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you somehow missed the top of this broadcast, just head on over to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with the song Niyama Choma by Samba Impangala. We have been listening to the song Niyama Choma by Samba Impangala. I'm your host, Carol Van Dam in Washington. On behalf of our engineer, Saida Hamdan, and producer, Kwame Afore, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. She tanga, she nyanga Zanzibar.